Well, once again, spring is struggling to burst forth, and once again, it's time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible through a generous grant by the Knoll Foundation and also by the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions and concerns about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dr. Burden, thanks for joining us again for What's Bugging You.
It's my pleasure, Bill.
So I think first up, we're going to go to, it seems that we have a new scale insect that's been attacking crepe myrtles. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of a critter this is and exactly what is it doing to the crepe myrtles?
Scale insects are very unique in the fact that they're not very active. Once they settle in, they will stay in the same spot for the rest of their lives. They look like little scabs on the stems and the bark of trees and shrubs and other plants as well. When they settle down, they have mouth parts that are very similar to a mosquito in the fact that they're basically sucking the plant tissue's juices out and the nutrients that the plant's producing through photosynthesis. Instead of the plant being able to use that nutrition, the bug is taking it for themselves. They can multiply very rapidly, and when in high enough numbers, they can be detrimental. Now, that's scales in general. This particular scale that's now hit the Arklatex area has moved up from southern Texas and southern Louisiana. We first thought it was just a scale that was crossed over. It went from azaleas and it crossed over to crepe myrtles, but we now know that it's an invasive species, probably from somewhere in Asia. And the best way to treat it chemically is to do what we call apply a systemic insecticide. Just go to your local hardware store where you normally buy your insecticides and look for anything that has garden tree or shrub in it, but it has to be a systemic. You actually apply it to the soil, and then the roots take up the insecticide. It goes into the vascular system of the plant, and then instead of feeding on the plant's nutritional juices, it'll feed on this insecticide, and it will kill them. Of course, they're right there on the surface of the plant. They're not going to fly away. You could also take soapy water and a soft brush and brush them off if you just have a few crepe myrtles around the house. And then if that doesn't take care of it, then apply the pesticide.
You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 to get your question in tonight. The program is What's Bugging You? And our resident entomologist is Dr. Beverly Burden. She's also an associate professor of biology at LSUS. And we'd like to hear your phone calls tonight. And go ahead, give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We do have a caller online right now. Go ahead with your question. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. I had a question. We just purchased a home here just south of the Sabine River in Longview. And we have these little dry spots of sand where the grass doesn't grow, and these ants, They don't look like any fire ant or anything I've ever seen. They bore a hole into the ground, and they move very, very fast, and they seem resistant to any kind of pesticides that I've used to try to remove them. You know, we have small children. I was trying to see if she had any idea of what those might be.
There are literally dozens in worldwide, hundreds of species of different ants, and they all have different behavior. Most ants do not build mounds like the fire ant does. Most of them do have underground nests. And are they larger than a fire ant? Are they smaller than a fire ant?
They're relatively small compared to a fire ant. I mean, I would almost say tiny. And they move very erratically. It's kind of the best way I can describe it.
Well, since they don't have formalized trails, I have a sneaky suspicion that you brought up a question that Bill and I were planning on talking about tonight, and that's the new amp that's come up from the Houston area that's coming up through the Texas counties, and that's called the tawny crazy ant. And it is also an invasive species. We believe that it came from Argentina. And the other question I would have with you, have you gotten stung by any?
No, they don't seem to bite.
Well, ants normally sting, but unlike fire ants, these guys do not have a stinger. So that just basically told me that we're probably 90% sure that you do have the tawny crazy ant. And most general insecticides should be able to take care of it. But the problem with the tawny crazy ant is that it's going to outcompete the fire ant. And everybody from the Houston area on up says that they wish they had the fire ant back, because these guys have extremely large colonies. They where the fire ants are in the thousands, these are in the millions. They are small, very fast. And one of the reasons they call them the crazy ant is exactly what you described, is that they don't have formalized trails and they just kind of scatter everywhere.
Right.
And what kind of insecticide have you tried?
I think I used something called Ortho. It was just a scatter, you know, where you walk around the yard and just kind of scatter it across and lightly water it.
The active ingredient in the Ortho ant is a chemical called acephate. And if acephate isn't working for you, I would try some other type of a pyrethroid insecticide. If you look at the active ingredient on an insecticide bottle, and it'll have a big, long chemical name, but if it ends in the suffix THRIN, that means it's a pyrethroid or a pyrethrin, and it's actually safer than the acephate, which is another class of compounds. So you might try that. And you just also might try, you know, flushing them out with water and disturbing the colony. And since you do know where they're colonizing, then that's something that a lot of people have trouble finding, is the colony. So at least you have that advantage.
I have one more question, if I may. We built a chicken coop in the backyard, and I've noticed just a horde of bumblebees. And they're relatively curious. They'll fly right up to your face. And, of course, I mean, they don't bother me quite as much, but when my son's out there, my two-year-old and my wife, you know, they seem to really, really bother them. And they don't seem to have any interest in stinging. They don't seem to be bothering the chickens any, but they are centralized in the chicken coop. There's no nest whatsoever. I just built it. I'm trying to figure out if there's some reason why they're attracted to that.
Did you build it of wood? Is it made out of wood?
No, it's made out of reclaimed metal.
Okay, well, then you probably aren't talking about the carpenter bee. You probably may have bumblebees. And like you said, they're not aggressive. And you might try, you know, just some regular, you know, spray. You might even try some soapy water, spraying them with soapy water. I'll tell you what else that's really fun, not fun, but interesting to do, and that would be take some of hairspray out there and spray them with hairspray. It'll glue up their wings and they won't be able to fly.
So, but there's no concern with interaction with a child. I mean, there's
only,
I've heard that there's two different kinds, one with like a white spot that could be aggressive, and one that doesn't. Is that true? Or?
Yeah, it is. It's called the bald face bee, and some are more aggressive. Again, there's many different types of bees out there, and there's a lot of good websites you can go to identify this bug and find out exactly what you do have. And if it's about the same size of a bumblebee and it has a yellow rear end, then it is a bumblebee. But unless the child is naturally have an allergy toward the toxins of wasps and bees, you know, you would know this by now probably. You don't want your child to go into anaphylactic shock, or they carry an EpiPen. But I would just, you know, tell your boy just not to go out there and mess with the chicken coop. Plus chickens, carry a lot of lice and mites and other things. I don't know if I would want a young child to be exposed to.
Understood. Well, thank you for your help.
Very well. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, and you are listening to What's Bugging You, our program about our insect world. If you are listening and would like to give us a call, you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. Or if you have a picture or a photograph of an insect, you can go ahead and send it to rmoran@lsus.edu. There might be something you want to identify. Also, on our website right now, we've talked about two different bugs that are problematic here. You will see photos of both the Tawny Crazy Ant, and also the Crepe Myrtle Scale on our website at redriverradio.org. Just click on the What's Bugging You post. We're going to go next to Wayne from Texas. Wayne, you're on the air. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, it's actually Lane.
Oh, okay.
With an L, but we just moved to a little farmhouse in the big city of out of Avenger, and we have about 4 acres, but the house sits on 1 acre surrounded by a lot of pasture, and there are, I believe, moles trails everywhere. And I've planted some trees from Arbor Day. I planted about a dozen, and there are grub worms. It's just heaven for grub worms. And I was wondering, is that why there are so many moles in this area? And if I get rid of those and how to get rid of those, would that help solve my mole problem?
Moles do eat grubs. They're omnivores. They'll eat just about anything. And grubs, a lot of people don't even know what grubs are. The grubs are the immature form of a June beetle, and they are vegetarians. They will feed on the roots of grasses and trees and shrubs. So if you have a high enough population of grubs, they could actually be detrimental to the trees that you did plant there. But it's very hard to get rid of grubs. They're actually kind of beneficial too, because they keep the soil aerated. And so I would treat the moles more than I would treat the grubs. And there's poisons that you can put out for them, or there's mole traps. Mole traps are very curious, because you have to dig down and find the tunnel of the mole, and then you have to put a trap going through one end and a trap going through the other end, because you don't know which direction the mole is going to come from. And moles are very sensitive whenever there's a disturbance within their tunneling system. They will come in and investigate. And so knowing a little bit of the behavior, the organism sometimes helps in their capture. I don't think you would be able to relocate them.
Okay, well, I was planning on planting a garden Good Friday, and this bothered, will they mess up my garden as well?
They can with their tunneling, but I'm not a mole expert, I'll tell you that. But I'm putting in a garden myself, but I don't have moles. I would just start treating the moles and getting them out of there.
Okay. Well, the last thing is, talking to the older, wiser guys in the area, they said take away the food source first, the grub worms. And then secondly, one guy's invested in these little things planted all in his yard that vibrate. I don't know if it's wind or whatever, and he says that they're supposed to get rid of things in the yard. Have you heard anything about that?
I have, but I have not seen any scientifically published material that validates that theory or that hypothesis, if you will.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your call. And if you'd like to get in on this conversation tonight, the number is 800-552-8502. The name of the program is What's Bugging You? And our guest tonight is Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. And we're going to go to Suzanne from Alexandria. Suzanne, what's bugging you tonight? Hello, Suzanne. Hello, Suzanne. Okay, well, we'll just go on to our next question here on What's Bugging You, and that is that there seems to, the persistence of bed bugs, I should say, seems to always crop up around this time of year. And can you tell us what's been going on with the bed bug situation?
It's getting worse. One of the problems with bed bugs is that they're easily transferable with suitcases or other material that people bring from hotels back to the house, or they go and they move into an apartment where there's already a population established. And so they're easily transferable, and they're very hard to control. Some of the best measures that I've heard of is to basically take and double bag all of your bedding and wash it in hot water, dry it for at least 30 minutes on high heat, And the inside of the bag, you'll need to throw that away because that could be have bed bugs in it. And with your mattresses and your box springs, what you need to do is to, you can buy these mattress covers and these box springs covers that are plastic, and or they'll, sometimes they'll even say bed bug safe because they've started marketing them that way. And the zippers are tight enough that the bed bugs can't get in, and they can't escape either, and they'll eventually just die in there. And then if you have a frame of a bed, you have to treat that with some insecticides. And you, if you vacuum up the area, then you need to immediately throw away your vacuum bag or empty out your bagless canister. And so the thing about bed bugs is that they're a nuisance pest, but they're not a medical pest. And the fact, like mosquitoes will transmit diseases, bed bugs have not been known to transmit any diseases. So people laugh when I tell them I'd rather be bitten by a bed bug than a mosquito because it's just going to be a bite.
Well, and that does bring us to an online question that we have, and that concerns mosquitoes and the West Nile virus. Mm-hmm. And this caller wanted to know if people should really be concerned about West Nile and other diseases from mosquitoes.
I think you should be very concerned about West Nile and other mosquito diseases. And let me talk a little bit about that subject. When a female mosquito takes a blood meal, she is engorging herself with blood proteins, proteins that she'll need to produce a clutch of eggs. And when a mosquito sticks her mouth parts into your tissue, it's like injecting two hypodermic needles. With one, she's pulling out the blood, and with the other, she's actually injecting her saliva into your tissues. Her saliva will have like viruses, bacteria, and other type of microbes that can cause diseases. One thing that it's important to note is that not all mosquitoes can carry all diseases. There's three basic families of, or not family, but rather genus, genera of mosquitoes. One is more closely associated with encephalitis and West Nile. Others are more closely associated with malaria. And of the things that you could get here, West Nile is one of the most important ones. And West Nile normally only has severe detrimental effects on the very young or the very old. If you're a healthy middle-aged adult and you get bit by a mosquito transferring the West Nile virus into your tissues, you probably will not even have symptoms. But I think it's very important that if you know you're going to be in a mosquito heavily infested area, to go ahead and wear a repellent that does have DEET in it. They've come out with a new formula now, similar to DEET. I haven't really had that much time to research it, but once I do, I'll bring it back here and share it with the Red River Radio listening audience.
You're listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's also an associate professor of biology at LSUS, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 if you'd like to get in a question tonight. And we're going to go next to Ricky from El Dorado, Arkansas. Ricky, what's your question tonight? What's bugging you? Hello, Ricky. All right, well, let's go to the next one. Is this Lee?
Yeah.
Hi, Lee. What's your question tonight? Lee from Jacksonville.
Okay, well, I called you a few years ago, and you saved my life with this acephate for fire ant stuff.
Yes, sir.
It works. But now I got another question. I've got a standalone two-car garage by my house here, and it's got a cement floor, and every year about this time, I got all sorts of pests out there. I got spiders, and I got ants, and I got everything that crawls and creeps. And what I was wondering is, I've been spraying it every year. I get those spectracide bombs put in there, and that kills everything, it seems to. I got to sweep them out. But they say on them they do not affect fire ants or brown recluse spiders. Is there something that would affect them?
Well,
some kind of spray?
Well, you know what to do for the fire ants. Now, for the brown recluse spiders, other than directly spraying them, there's nothing that I know of that would actually be a deterrent from them.
Uh-huh.
The good thing about brown recluse spiders is that there's one reason they're called recluse, that they're not aggressive and they're not going to come at you. What we always tell people about the brown recluse spider is they have certain areas that they habitat. They're going to be in areas that have not been disturbed for a while. You might have part of the corner of your garage where you've had your gardening tools stored all winter. Mm-hmm. And if you go over there and you start messing around with those, wear gloves, you know, take a precaution. And so if you reach in and a brown recluse is there, another problem that we have with the brown recluse bite, and I can say this from experience, is that when a brown recluse bites, it's just barely a little pinprick. Many people don't even realize that they've been bitten until symptoms start to develop. And those symptoms, of course, can be a wound. You see all the scare tactics that they're around the internet that this wound is going to come into a large gaping oozing ulcer, but if treated with antibiotics and treated with, you know, just common sense, then it's not going to cause that severe of a wound. And with about 10% of the population, they don't even develop a wound. Sometimes it goes systemic and it just spreads throughout the body. And that happened to me once, and you swell up and maybe get a little dizzy, but they're not fatal.
Well, my neighbor here, he was an older man, and he wasn't in a good health, and it killed him. It got bad and bad and worse, and then I don't know if it contributed to his death or not, but okay, for them things. Now, what about the fire ants in there?
Well, the fire ants are not going to be nesting on a concrete garage floor. They're going to be coming in there and looking for food or moisture, and so I would just practice, make sure you keep it swept out, and clean, so there's no moisture, there's no food in there for the fire ants, and they'll quit foraging in there if they're not going to be able to find anything to eat or anything to drink. And I would, instead of actually putting out a surface poison for the fire ants, there's actually some good fire ant baits that you can put out, so they'll come in and they'll carry it back to the mound. And so you could bait them out of there, so to speak, poison them out of there, other than just a contact like the acephate.
Could I use this orthoacephate?
I would buy me a little, you know, picnic mustard ketchup bottle and put some of that in there and just kind of dust along the edges of the garage, and I think you would have very good control of the fire ants that way.
But that has worked around my yard, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
That's good stuff, for sure.
Unfortunately, one thing that we know about insecticides and insects, it's not if they will become resistant to it, it's how long will it take for them to become resistant to it. And so we can enjoy the use of acephate until then, and we don't know when that's going to be, but
okay.
It will happen.
Okay. I sure appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks for your call, Lee.
You are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. If you have a question about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly insects, and we are going to go next to Abby from Trinity County, Texas. Abby, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I have two things going on, which is really kind of interesting. The first thing is I might have some pine beetles. Something was trying to attack a big, you know, 70-foot pine tree. And so I put Damon, the insecticide. I just used my yard sprayer, and I sprayed it with Damon, and I'm not sure if it was effective or what, but after I was spraying that, I was looking around at the trees in the circumference, and I noticed a bunch of little kind of like shot holes. And I said, oh my goodness, there's something, you know, trying to get these trees. And I thought, well, it's probably native to the East Texas forest. But I went ahead and put some Damon on the tree surrounding, and I wanted to know what your entomologist thought about that.
Well, you have had a perfect description of what we call the southern pine beetle, and they are so small, and it's actually a very interesting situation from a biological point of view. Literally millions of dollars are spent each year and large forested areas that's harvested for timber to control the southern pine beetle. And they're about the same size of a pinhead. And they'll produce these little bitty shot-like holes. It looks like somebody stood back and shot the tree with a shotgun with a very small shot bore. And the problem with them is they are inside the bark, and insecticides don't readily penetrate the bark. And one of the best things that you can do is just monitor the tree. If it starts to become, if it starts to die, just go ahead and have somebody come out there and cut it out and do like a sanitation, remove the source of the pine beetles. I'm not sure, familiar with the demon insecticide that you said. I'm not sure what the actual active ingredient is on that. If you could let me know, if you do know, that might be helpful. But the other cool thing about the pine beetle is that once a few infect the tree, they send out a pheromone, and what we call an aggregation pheromone, and the other pine beetles will actually pick up on that smell, and it's almost like the pine beetles are saying, "Hey, we got a tree over here. Everybody come over here and help us infect it." And then they'll just bring in more and more and more, and it's just a domino effect. I'm sorry to hear that you have that problem. You said you had another question?
Well, it's because... First, I noticed that the pine tree was just looking a little, you know, under the weather, and I said, oh, I wonder if it's that pine beetle. But then these same shot hole-looking things started getting on my other trees, and I was like, what is this, you know? So the demon is like a exterior insecticide for the house, you know, that you'd put around your house or mm-hmm. whatever, but it's super effective. If you don't know it, go to your hardware store and ask them for some and check it out.
I will definitely be checking that out.
It is one of the best insecticides I have ever found for, you know, keeping insects from coming into your house, spiders, everything. And what happens is the little bug will walk through it and it'll stick to its legs, and then it'll kill that bug.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that with me. I'll definitely look into that. And, pine beetles tend to be very, very picky to which trees. They probably won't be infecting the hardwood trees that you have around the house, but there are other insects that will bore into the hardwood trees. They're a different type of beetle. They're called a longhorn beetle because they have very, very long antenna, whereas the pine beetles are very short, stubby. You don't even see their antenna. They just look like a little brown dot.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and she is taking your questions and calls tonight about anything dealing with our insect world. Both fiendish and friendly insects are welcome. If you'd like to call in, give us a call, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Ricky, you are on the line. Ricky from Arkansas, you're on the line. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, I was listening to your program, and I heard you mention about using water to flush out those ants we don't like, you know?
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to comment on that is because I use the water, but I use Clorox bleach. I'll tell you what I did. I had the problem with, I guess it was the fire ants building the mounds in the yard, and then also the ones that were digging, tunneling. And so I tried to use regular bug spray, ant road spray at first while, but it seemed to just run them off and they come back. But anyway, I'll get to the point. What I did was I got some Clorox bleach, liquid Clorox bleach, and I warmed it up in some regular warm water, and then I put a little liquid dishwashing liquid or washing powder, Tide or something like that in it to make it bubbly and warm. And then I poured it down in those tunnels. I just flooded them. And then mounds that were above the ground, I did the same thing. First, I took my shovel and smashed the mound and loosened the dirt around it so that the soil would absorb the Clorox bleach water better, and it did. And it ran all those ants away. Then a few days later, I noticed they had moved. Like you said, they moved to another part of the yard where we're rebuilding. So I'd done that, and I just kind of monitored my yard to see wherever they would pop up at, and I would get on it quickly. But anyway, after a few applications of that over a few days, they disappeared, and I haven't seen them since in my yard again. I got rid of them, and I swear it was the Clorox bleach in the warm water. And like I said, when I heard, listen to your show, you mentioned about trying the warm water, I just wanted to agree with you on that. I think that works good, and I thought it was kind of environmental friendly too, without all the chemicals spraying on the yards. Because I noticed when I used any kind of chemical sprays or whatever, trying to get rid of the ants maybe, that I was killing other insects around there also. And the birds used to come in my yard a lot, and I noticed they'd be feeding, and they stopped coming, I think, because I was killing other insects that they were feeding off of.
Probably.
So anyway, yeah, that's just my opinion. I noticed that. So anyway, that's why I went to the bleach and started thinking about an alternative, something, you know, to get rid of these ants, and I had the warm water and bleach and a little soap, and that worked for me.
Let me interject in here, Ricky. I would say that what I would advise other people to do if they want to take this approach is to be very careful. The active ingredient in bleach is sodium hypochlorite, and it could have some toxic effect to the plants. And so if you don't want to harm your plants, then you may want to rethink using sodium hypochlorite. But the soap that you put in the water has been an effective insecticide for soft-bodied insects for hundreds of years. A lot of insects will have a waxy covering on them, and this is especially effective against aphids that are feeding on your plants. If you'll take and mix up a little soapy water and spray it on the plant where the insects are feeding, that basically takes off that waxy coat, and they can't retain their moisture, and they'll desiccate and basically dry up and dehydrate and perish that way. But basically, you're using sodium hypochlorite or you're using other type of insecticides. But I'm glad it worked for you. I just would be a little bit careful, you know, spraying it or putting it in the ground around other plants.
Right. You know, I would like to say also, I didn't use it around any flowering or plants. This was like just in the open lawn on the grass. You know what I mean? Just mm-hmm. it was no plants around. Like,
and you didn't kill out your grass that way?
Nope, it sure didn't.
Good, I'm glad.
I looked for that. I was wondering what that effect would it make, turn the green brown or whatever. Yeah. But like I said, I kind of used a shovel and dug around a little mound to make it dirt-wise and then done it. So, but no, I didn't notice anything, as far as the killing the grass or anything.
Probably by the time the grass came back, most of it had been dissipated. That would be my guess, Ricky. Thank you for your call.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go next to Alex from Alexandria. What's bugging you tonight?
Oh, sir, I have a question on raising catawba worms.
Mm-hmm.
What it is, miss, we just moved to some new property on the north end of Calcasieu Parish in the southwest corner. And we're looking for something to plant on the property out there. And talking to some of the old-timers, the catawba trees are numerous, and you get the beans and the flowers, but you very rarely see the worms anymore.
Well,
and it's one of the best fishing baits.
Absolutely.
As a child.
Absolutely. That's been a question that anglers have been looking for a long, long time. It's easy to grow a catawba tree, but it's not so easy to get the catawba moths to come in and lay the eggs on the catawba tree. And I don't know what the answer is. If you and I could figure that out, Alex, then we could go into business together and we would have a nice, little business that we could retire on. I'm confident if we could actually harvest and grow catawba worms on your catawba trees. And
Where would I find any additional information, miss?
Well, I have actually gone online and tried to look this up. And I thought the first problem would be getting the catawba seeds to germinate, but that tends not to be the problem at all, because one thing a lot of people don't realize that seed germination is sometimes a lot more than just putting it in the soil and putting some water on it. Sometimes the seeds have to go through a cold period. Sometimes the seeds have to go through some kind of a scouring action, where the seed coat is roughed up so it can absorb the water. But I have not been able to find any research articles on the attractant of catawba worms. What we need to do is figure out what type of sex pheromone that the females emit to bring in the males, and then that just might bring in all of them. But I'm not sure if anybody's researching that. Maybe that might be my next scientific grant to write. Thanks for the idea, Alex.
All righty. Well, I appreciate the information, and I'll just continue my search I'm looking for various plants to put on our new property. And that was one thing that was thrown into the pot.
Absolutely. I would plant them, and there may be just some insects are cyclic, where they'll be very numerous, you know, every third year, or when conditions are favorable. We had a pretty harsh winter, maybe not so far as Alexandria, but up here in the north part of Louisiana, we had an extra number of freezes this year, and so it's going to be interesting to see what comes out and what doesn't come out. Most of the time, the freeze will just knock them back down, but if you figure out the Catawba worm situation, let me know.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you for calling. And if you'd like to call in right now to What's Bugging You, the number is 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 to talk to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio. We have Carter and Ann. You're on hold right now, so please stay online. Harold from Nacogdoches, you're next. What's bugging you tonight?
This is Harold Hawley in Nacogdoches.
Mm-hmm.
I was wanting to know what I could do about it. I have a few roaches in my house. How would I get rid of them, even not having to do a lot of chemical spraying and all, or is there a remedy or something?
I can fix you right up. There is a chemical that's called boric acid, and sometimes it just says...
Before, but I never had any luck with it.
Well, it might have been... How did you apply it?
I just put it out. Isn't it a powder?
Yes, sir, it is.
Uh-huh.
Normally... You just kind of want to...
some home defense. I bought it at Walmart. It's a home defense spray.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. That's a pyrethrin spray. And unless you spray it directly on the cockroaches, it's not going to have impact.
I just hate those things. And I moved here, they were here, but I probably moved some with me, but not like this. My God.
You know, there's only three species of cockroaches that will... live with humans. All the other hundreds of species choose not to live with us, and cockroaches come in basically three sizes: small, medium, and large.
These are the small, little brown ones.
Yeah, that's called the German cockroach, not because it's just called the German cockroach. And they are very, very hard to treat. You may, if you live in an apartment, you may want to come
a house. Uh-huh. But I'm under housing and HUD.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they tell me I have to take care of it.
Right, right.
But I don't have the money for to do all the extermination, but I need I'm on a low income, and I need some kind of home remedy or something to spray. I bought home defense, but I don't know. I even set off bombs, and it's still coming back. Huh.
Yeah, you would actually may have to get somebody to come in there. I know you said you can't afford it, but boric acid, it may be just the way you applied the boric acid. What you need to do is just take and put a light dusting of it around every edge behind the refrigerator, in the cupboards,
in
the washer and dryer. You know, every place, if it's an edge, just go around and because cockroaches like to walk around the edge. Very often, you normally don't see cockroaches out in the middle. They like to hide behind things and just dust it. But don't put it in big clumps because they won't walk through it. And they have to walk through it, and it gets on their legs and their antenna, and it irritates them, and then they clean themselves like a cat does.
Well,
and
it
access
the
stomach.
At any Family Dollar or something?
Oh, I've gotten it at the dollar stores for
sure.
You know, and sometimes it's just called boric acid or roach killer. It's 99% active ingredient, and it's not toxic to children or pets.
Well,
you know?
I don't have any pets now. I had my cat died, so I don't have any children. I'm a bachelor, and I live alone.
I would definitely try boric acid again, Harold, and good luck with that.
Okay, well, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. If you'd like to give us a call tonight, you can. The number to call, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Carter from Jefferson, you're online right now. What's bugging you tonight?
Okay, thank you. I would ask Dr. Burden to tell me how to get rid of this little moth that flutters around inside. It's about a quarter inch long, maybe just a tad longer, just barely an eighth inch wide.
Uh-huh.
Do you know that one I'm talking about?
I sure do. I sure do, Carter.
Okay.
And you find it more around your pantry, do you?
Yeah.
These are called Indian meal moths, and I've had a problem with them too, and this is exactly what you have to do.
Okay.
You have to take everything out of the pantry, and they're inside there feeding on something. There's going to be what I call a hot spot for them.
Yeah.
When I had my problem, I had a bag of pecans stuck way up in the corner, and they were feeding on those pecans. But they'll feed on beans, nuts, anything like that, and you'll need to find the hot spot. And, of course, take that out and inspect anything that has meal, grains, nuts, beans,
right.
and just clean them out. And you need to take the shelves off because their eggs are, they'll hatch into little baby, little light cream-colored caterpillars.
Yeah.
And then they'll pupate and they'll form these little cocoon things, and you just need to take and clean them all out. You know, go in there with a sponge of warm soapy water and wipe everything down. And then things that you have, like in just store packaging, I now put everything into hard plastic containers like Rubbermaid, Tupperware, whatever you choose.
Okay.
They can chew through Ziploc bags. And so
right.
Ziploc bags are not going to be able to do it. You need hard, thick plastic containers. And then the other thing that I do to keep them from coming into my house is every time I buy anything like that, especially flour, I will take and put it in the freezer for a couple days. And in case it's just mildly infected, then that will kill them out, and then you know that you're not reinfesting your house. But they're called Indian meal moths. Now, you can also buy traps. They'll have traps that will emit a pheromone that will attract the adults in there. But sanitation.
That's it. That's the key.
Yep.
Hmm.
Good luck with that, Carter.
And put everything in the freezer when you get it for a day or so.
Anything that's made of meal or nuts or things like that, that's what I do, and that's what's recommended by the professionals, which I guess I am.
Wow. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Carter.
Give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 if you'd like to talk to our resident entomologist tonight. Her name is Dr. Beverly Burden, and she is an associate professor of biology at LSUS, and we are taking your calls tonight about what's bugging you. Again, 800-552-8502, the number to call. And from Bossier City, you're online next. What's bugging you?
I have a question about termites.
Uh-huh.
We have a oak flooring in our home that was put down about 5 years ago off of a slab. And about 3 months ago, we noticed in the middle of the den, one of the little slabs, they're about 2 1/4 inches, was popped up on the end like it had become wet. But we did not know of any spills or anything like that. And we were going to get it fixed, but hadn't gotten around to it. And yesterday, we noticed there were termites coming out underneath the little popped-up slab of oak and all over congregated around there. Have you ever heard of termites getting under an oak floor like that?
Absolutely. What we have here are called subterranean termites, which means that they have to maintain contact with the soil.
Uh-huh.
And that's why oftentimes I do a monthly inspection. I walk all the way around our house and see if I can see any what they call dirt tubes or dirt tunnels that's coming from the ground around the house up into the concrete slab, and so that they can actually invade the center of a den. Now, most people don't realize that they have a termite problem until they have a water leak. And that's when they find out that they have termite damage. If you control the water, you can control termites. Termites have to have a source of water. This time of the year, the termite and colonies will have what's called mating swarms. And the normal termites just look like white ants. And but the ones that are going to be males and females are darker colored, and they will have wings. And unfortunately, also at this time is when the fire ants will also have their mating swarms. And fire ant reproductives and termite reproductives look a lot alike, but let me tell you how you can tell the difference. Termites will have four wings, and all four of those wings will be long and about the same length, whereas with ants, they're males and females that have wings. One pair of wings will be much shorter than the other pair of wings. Ants also have their antenna in the shape of a little elbow, whereas termite antenna looks like a small string of Mardi Gras beads. And if you have that type of infestation in your house, most of the insecticides that are designed to treat termites need to be applied by somebody that has a pesticide license. It's not something that you can go down to the hardware store or the big box store and buy. And so, unfortunately, I think you need to get a professional out there to take a look at it once you've established that it's termites, not ants.
Okay. All right. I wonder if we can't identify a leak, is it still possible that they just came up there through the slab?
It's possible. You know, anything is possible. One of my favorite little poems about termites is, a primordial termite tasted wood and found that it was good, and that's why your cousin May fell through the parlor floor today. But, yeah, most people, I would definitely look for a water leak somewhere.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Or some kind of moisture.
Okay. Thank you.
You are listening to What's Bugging You, a program about our insect world with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist here. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, all lines are open right now, 800-552-8502. Again, that's 800-552-8502 if you'd like to call in and tell us what's bugging you. And we did have a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but they say they have a wood boring bee or wood boring bees hatching, and they want to know, are they dangerous and how can they be controlled?
These are called carpenter bees, and a lot of people mistake them for bumblebees. They're about the same size as a bumblebee, about you know, the size of a thumbnail or so. And you can distinguish carpenter bees from bumblebees in the fact that carpenter bees have a complete black behind, where bumblebees will have yellow on its behind. Carpenter bees are not aggressive at all, and they mainly will not even notice humans. You can walk and stand there and watch them. And what they do is they bore a perfectly circle hole into wood. And normally it's untreated wood. And then they go in there and they use this hole like a nursery. And they will lay a prey item in there. And then they will lay their little eggs. And what I do when I start to see carpenter bees around my house, I have a little racket. And I just kind of knock them to the ground and stomp on them. There's really, you could take, you know, and spray them with an insecticide. And that would take care of them too. But I prefer, you know, just a simpler method, the knockdown and stomp method. And that's what you can do about carpenter bees.
There you go. Give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 if you'd like to get your call in on What's Bugging You. We have open lines right now, and we're going to go to, I don't have any name for this caller, but caller, you're on the line right now. What's bugging you?
Yes, this is Carlos. The little black ants, like sugar ants, how in the world you get rid of them things? We had a lot of them this year, out around trees and around the edge of the house and stuff.
Yeah, they're called little black ants, and that's actually their name, little black ants. And I've had a problem at my house, too, and I just use any general insecticides. I always prefer to use pyrethrins. And as I said earlier in the show, if you didn't catch it then, when you go to buy an insecticide, you always need to look at the active ingredient. And if the active ingredient, the name of the active ingredient, ends in THRIN, like benfenthrin, THRIN, that's a common one that you'll see, then that's a good, safe insecticide to use around the yard with pets, kids, and other perhaps birds and wildlife. And the best thing to do is find the nest. If you find out where they're nesting, then you get the biggest bang for your buck, so to speak, and you'll be able to take care of them. They are a nuisance, but that's all they are. And so, and last year, normally in the summer, they start really becoming active when it gets dry because they're looking for moisture. Insects always need to have a source of moisture, and so you need to make sure that you control that.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Carlos.
Thank you for calling in to What's Bugging You. And if you'd like to get your call in right now, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have all lines open right now, but we do have a couple of online questions. Roy from Shreveport wants to know about Catawba worms, and they're disappearing in his area and wants to know, is it because of mosquito spraying?
The active ingredient that they use to spray for mosquitoes probably is not that detrimental to Catawba worms. It's meant to knock down the adults and take care of the immatures. But I think it's just the urbanization, urban sprawl, and the avid use of pesticides in urban areas. People oftentimes ask me, Roy, well, Dr. Burden, when are the insects going to take over the world? And my answer is they already have, and that they're just allowing us to live here with them. And if you want trees and if you want flowers and you want, you know, you're going to have to put up with the insects, or you're going to have to spray an insecticide. Now, along with the Catawba worm disappearing, you'll also hear the same thing being said for lightning bugs, which are actually male beetles that are up in the air flashing mating signals to the females that live below in the grass, hence the word glowworms, female lightning bugs. And I've started to see actually a resurgence of them in some of the areas. I travel back and forth from the university to my house on the outskirts of the city, and I'm starting to see more and more lightning bugs, you know, when it gets to be dusk and they're lighting up, and I used to never see them before. So I'm glad that some things are resilient and they're bouncing back.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we have time for a little more work here tonight. We do have another question that came in. They didn't want to go on the air, but it's about Catawba worms, too. And this person had heard that Catawba worms need to be transplanted from one tree to another. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct. Catawba worms are the immature stage. They're actually they're not worms in the sense of an earthworm. They are caterpillars. And a lot of people use the word worm when they're referred to caterpillars. And the caterpillars are the immature of moths and butterflies. These happen to be the immatures of moths. And the adult form of the Catawba worm, the Catawba sphinx moth, is a large, robust moth. And the females will fly to and from the Catawba trees laying her eggs. And that's how Catawba worms get on the Catawba tree, because the female Catawba moth is laying her eggs and flying about choosing Catawba trees to lay her eggs on, and then they'll hatch into the so-called Catawba worms. And of course, the reason everybody wants Catawba worms, as we've discussed a little bit already this evening, is the fact that they make they're wonderful fish bait. You get a Catawba worm on your hook and you're almost guaranteed to be frying fish that night.
All right, and you are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio. We've got three callers online. Johnny and Chris, you're on deck. Mike from Bentley, you're up next. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Question about ambrosia beetle and other beetles that infect timber.
Yes, sir.
And especially the ones that carry the fungus that sustain the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know the ambrosias, I've got a little hobby mill and I make furniture.
Right.
I know the ambrosia is famous for the maple. And the insect that causes the stain in the blue nemed pine,
mm-hmm.
is that also ambrosia or is it something else? Or?
Now, there's several species. The scientific family is primarily scolitids. But yeah, they'll go in there. And have you heard of the engraver beetles as well?
Yeah.
In fact, those are, I think the engraver beetles, if you pop off that bark and you look at some of the patterns that they have. And again, they're called galleries. And whether it's the ambrosia beetle or, other type of fungus beetles, the fungus beetles, they're actually using the wood to grow their fungus because that's what they eat on, just like harvester ants in East Texas and in South Louisiana will harvest the leaves to grow the fungus that they feed on. And there's also something that I'm sure you probably had some experience with that are called pinhole borer beetles. And
right.
Yeah, they'll just go in there and the adults will lay their egg and you don't really see the holes until they exit. But the good thing about pinhole borers is they won't bore into treated wood. So as soon as you get your wood treated, then you're going to take care of the pinhole beetles. But there's many different species of beetles that we call ambrosia, but they pretty much all have the same behavior and the same biology. They're crawling in there, and they're feeding off of the vascular tissue, or they're using the vascular tissue to grow their fungus on and feed on them. And it's fascinating from a biological point of view, but not once they get in and start to infect the wood.
All right, you are listening to What's Bugging You, our program about the insect world. Johnny from Shreveport, you are up next. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep.
I've got a, I guess it's a hornet. It's pretty big. It's about the size of my index finger. Not long. And it burrows into the ground right next to my house.
Yeah, Johnny, let me, we're running short of time here, so let me just jump in there and tell you exactly what you have. What you have are basically, is a large hornet. It's called cicada killers because they oftentimes will feed on cicadas, what people here in the South call locusts, those big bugs that make the noise up in the trees. And they're actually, they'll catch the cicadas, they'll take them down in that hole, they'll bury them and lay an egg on them. And the cicada is still alive, and so basically they're eaten alive until they die, and then it'll pupate, and out will come another cicada killer. They're a great part of the ecosystem. They're not aggressive. They're not harmful. But again, I wouldn't mess with them.
Sort of like the original alien, I think, when I think about that. We have time for one, maybe two more callers. Chris from Keithville, you're online. What's bugging you tonight? Hello, Chris? Chris? All right, we're going to go to our next call. Joe from Effie.
I'm here.
Oh, you are here. Okay, there you go.
Yes, I have some large ants that are like at the base of several trees in my backyard. I think they may be carpenter ants. Will they kill the tree? I mean, they seem to be like burrowing in kind of in the center somewhat at the base.
Highly unlikely that they're carpenter ants.
Okay.
But there are no ants out there that will kill a tree that I'm aware of. They may just be using that outer bark is a non-living part of the tree, and they may just be using that as a living refuge. And so they're not really into the tissue of the tree that's alive. A lot of people don't realize this, that the center of the tree is dead wood. The bark of the tree is not living material, but it's that layer right in between the dead wood and the bark. And ants would not be feeding on that. They may be feeding on other things that might be up in there because most ants are predators. They'll go out there and they'll find any source of nutrition that they can to feed on.
Okay. I have one other real quick question. There's some little piles of dirt in several places on my yard. It looks like something burrowed up. Just, I don't know how to describe them.
How big are the piles?
Oh, small, like maybe 3 inches and, you know, maybe half inch tall.
You're lucky because that probably means that you have some native ant species instead of the fire ants in your yard.
Well, we have fire ants, too.
And if they're not bothering anything, I would just leave them alone because they're just a part of the ecosystem out there. And they will keep other insects out from eating, you know, the grass and some of the vegetables and flowers that you may have planted. So those are the good ones.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
All right. And we do have one last caller who didn't want to be identified or go on air, but they wanted to know, they use diatomaceous earth to kill ants and termites, but could this also kill good bugs as well?
Diatomaceous earth, what that does is it acts as an abrasive, especially to soft-bodied insects as well as slugs and snails. And it's almost like they're crawling across, you know, broken up glass. And I'm surprised that it's being, what did they say they were using it for, ants?
Using it to kill ants and termites.
Yeah, I can see where it would be detrimental to termites. I don't think it would be detrimental to ants because ants have such a hard exoskeleton. But it is a good, safe, natural way to discourage a lot of creepy crawlies out there. So if you're using it and it's working for you, I say go ahead and continue to do so.
All right. I want to thank you for all of our callers calling in tonight. And Beverly, thank you for coming in tonight. You've been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. The program is called What's Bugging You? We do want to thank again all of the callers tonight and everybody who wrote in as well. You can tune in for our next call-in show, which is Health Matters. That's going to be next Thursday, April 24th at 6 p.m., where the subject will be diabetes. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett with the help of Renee Moran and Wally Derleth. Dr. Beverly Burden is our resident entomologist, and this program has been hosted tonight by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burden for Red River Radio. And we are KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, and KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches.